I'm going to be in the book of Joshua today. Did I turn my mic on? Yeah. I'm going to be in the book of Joshua today. And we're going to read one chapter out of Joshua. And then I'm going to make five short points from that chapter. And what I'm hoping, what I'm praying today is that one of these points will make a lot of sense to you. And that you'll have an action to take today or this week as a result of it. So we're going to be in Joshua chapter 22, and I think to start, I'm just going to read the first nine verses of Joshua 22. Katie, I'll be reading from the NIV today. Joshua 22 reads like this. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, and he said to them, You have done all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, and you have obeyed me in everything I commanded. For a long time now, to this very day, you have not deserted your brothers, but have carried out the mission the Lord your God gave you. Now that the Lord your God has given your brothers rest, as he promised, return to your homes in the land that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the Jordan. But be very careful to keep the commandments and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you. To love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to obey his commands, to hold fast to him, and to serve him with all your heart and all your soul. And then Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their homes. To the half-tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given land in Bashan, and to the other half of the tribe, Joshua gave land on the west side of the Jordan with their brothers. When Joshua sent them home, he blessed them, saying, Return to your homes with your great wealth, with your large herds of livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, and a great quantity of clothing, and divide with your brothers the plunder from your enemies. So the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh left the Israelites at Shiloh in Canaan to return to Gilead, their own land, which they had acquired in accordance with the command of the Lord through Moses. Okay, so way interesting, right? You kind of jump into the middle of a story here and you're like, I need some context or something because I don't even understand what is going on in this passage. So it starts by saying, then. Or in the ESV it says, at that time. And so what I want to do is I want to show you a map up here. It's going to come up like any moment. Watch this. It's really cool. Wait for it. Here it is. Okay. So we're going to look at this map and I just want to briefly tell you what's going on. So if you remember your biblical history, you remember the Israelites, after they came out of Egypt, they wandered around in the desert for a while. Actually, before they wandered, they came right up to the Promised Land, and they kind of peeked into it a little bit, and everybody got afraid because some of the spies, they came back and they said, Oh, we're like grasshoppers. Those guys are so big and scary. You remember this? So then it's exactly what they said, grasshoppers. So then what happened is they had to head back out into the desert. They wandered around for 40 years. 40 years. You've got to just kind of let that sink in a little bit. What could you do in 40 years? Wow. Okay. So they wander around. Then what happens is they come back up to, come into the land. They conquer some guys around here. And then this really wild thing happens in Numbers 32. They're just ready to go into the Promised Land again. And these guys, Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, these tribes, what they say is, you know, what would be really cool is if we didn't go into the Promised Land and instead we just stayed here. Could we have this land right here? And maybe you guys, you could all go into the Promised Land. That would be cool. You can have the rest of your war and fight them all and such. But we're just going to live here. Is that cool with you, Moses? And what Moses says in Numbers 32 is he says, not a chance. There is not, we've already done this. We've already been here once. And everybody was like, oh, it's scary. We're going to go. And then we wandered in the, do you want to wander 40 years again? There is not a chance. And then these guys, they say, yeah, but this land is really good. I'm paraphrasing, okay? This land is good. How about we just stay here? That would be great, right? And what Moses says, and actually they have a little bit of a good explanation. I'm summarizing quickly because we need to get back to Joshua 22. But the end of the story is this. Moses says, I tell you what, Reubenites, Gadites, half-tribe of Manasseh, this is what we'll do. I'll give you this land. More specifically, God will give you this land. You can stay on the other side of the Jordan. The reason I pulled up the map here is, check this out. You got the Dead Sea. This is the Jordan River. Here's the Sea of Galilee up here. And so here's the promised land over here. And they give them this part of the land, and they say, that'll be fine. You can live there. But there is no way that you are letting your brothers take the promised land on their own. There's no way that you guys are doing that. He actually calls them a brood of cowards. He says, there's no way. So what you're doing is you are helping them to take the promised land. And once it's all taken, the whole thing, then you can go home and live in your land on the other side of the Jordan. And they said, cool, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. That's where we pick up here in Joshua. So what it says is, then at that time, or then, after all the promised land had been taken, these guys, Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, the tribes, had helped them to conquer. The place was essentially conquered. And they were at peace. And then Joshua says, thanks for your help. You guys can go home. Here's the first point I want to make. Each one of my points today has the word united in it. You'll find united on the wheel over here about 5 o'clock on the wheel. We're going to be talking about the word united. Here's point number one. United believers commend those who serve well. United believers commend those who serve well. There is no reason that Joshua actually had to thank these guys. There's no reason that he actually had to commend them. After all, they were really only doing what they had to do because, in a way, they were kind of in trouble, weren't they? If you think about it, they were cowards. They didn't want to help their brothers go into the land. But Moses says, you're going to. And so they did. So they helped them the whole time. And then Joshua thanks them for their service, essentially. He says, you guys did a good job. It took a long time. Most people think it might have taken up to like 6 or 7 years, something like that, to take the land, and so Joshua commends them. He actually commends them pretty well here. He says, for a long time now, to this very day, you've not deserted your brothers, like they kind of threatened to. You've not deserted your brothers, but you've carried out the mission that the Lord God gave you, and this is what he says. You did everything that Moses said. You did everything that I had said. You have obeyed the Lord. So, good job. You guys can go home now. You can go live in your land. He commends those who had served well. And he sends them away in honor. They had kept their promise. Kept their promise to help out their brothers. He basically says, well done, good and faithful servant. Well done. Kind of similar to how one day we expect that when we get to heaven and stand before the Lord, he'll say, well done, good and faithful servant. When really, everything that we will have done is only by his grace and only in a response to him. United believers commend those who serve well. Honestly, there's a lot of us here in this church who are doing what God has called us to do, and it's good to be recognized for those things. Now, some would say, you know, there's not really any reason to commend someone for doing what they signed up to do. You know, if you serve in the nursery, or you serve on the worship team, or you serve in children's church, or you bring in the snacks, or whatever you do, Do you really have to say, hey, thanks for doing a good job at that? Well, sure. If you and I are going to live together the way that Jesus wants us to live together, then we need to commend one another when we do a good job. United believers commend those who serve well. That's point number one. Let's go on to point number two. I got to read the next few verses. Starting at verse 10. I hope that you have your seatbelt on because everything changes like in a big hurry here. Verse 10. So when they came to Gelilath, when they, it means Reubenites, Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. When they came to Gelilath near the Jordan in the land of Canaan, the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built an imposing altar. If you have a pen, you should underline imposing. An imposing altar there by the Jordan. And when the Israelites heard that they had built the altar on the border of Canaan at Gelilath near the Jordan on the Israelite side, the whole assembly of Israel gathered at Shiloh to go to war against them. So the Israelites sent Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, to the land of Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. With him they sent 10 of the chief men, one for each of the tribes of Israel, each the head of a family division among the Israelite class. So wow, that escalated quickly, didn't it? We just got done commending them, and now, instead, let's kill them! Seriously, we're like only five verses away from that. What happened? And how did it happen so quickly? What happened here? I guess it's just about this altar, right? They built this imposing altar. They built it on the Israelite side. Did you catch that? So if we go back to the map, what happened is they were at Shiloh, which is going to be about right here, I think. We'll see. No. I was way off. Not even on. We were out in the Mediterranean. Okay, so Shiloh's up around in here somewhere, okay? And so they head home, and before they cross the Jordan River, which, by the way, I should just say, the Jordan River is actually really, really wide in places, 5 to 10 miles. Sometimes there's 2,000-foot cliffs on each side, so it's like in this big, deep valley. You should know this, because the Jordan River is important in this story. So before they cross the river, they say, hey, guys, I got a great idea. It just came to me. I got it. Let's build a huge, imposing altar right here on their side before we cross. Great idea. It's a great idea. Let's build a huge, imposing altar. Why is that a problem? What do you think? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? Why would it be a problem to build a big, imposing altar? That was a lot of mumbling. I couldn't really make it out. So it was like, what'd you say?
Not their land.
First off, yeah, it's not. They didn't even do it on their land. They're like, before we leave these guys' land, we'll build it on their side. What else? There's a huge sign of disrespect in this. There's a bigger reason. Yeah, maybe. I don't think they took it that way. It's not necessarily a military action. How are they going to use this altar? That's, I think, what the Israelites, the guys on the west, that's what their beef is. They're like, so you built an altar. What are you going to do with this altar? Let me read you a passage from Deuteronomy. Now remember, Deuteronomy is the part right before these guys wandered around for 40 years because of lack of faith. Deuteronomy 12, 5 to 7. I'm going to read verses 5 to 7. This is what God says about, well, let me just read it. But you are to seek the place the Lord your God will choose from among all your tribes to put his name there for his dwelling. To that place you must go. There bring your burnt offerings and sacrifices, your tithes and your special gifts, what you have vowed to give, and your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. There, in the presence of the Lord your God, you and your family shall eat and shall rejoice in everything you've put your hand to, because the Lord your God has blessed you. And then, Katie, if we skip down to verse 13, it says, be careful not to sacrifice your burnt offerings anywhere you please. Offer them only at the place the Lord will choose in one of your tribes, and there observe everything I command you. So, the law says there's only one place. There's only one place that you can give your offerings. There's only one altar, and God has set it up at this time. It's at Shiloh. That's where the altar is. And to do anything else would be direct disobedience to the law. And that has serious consequences. These guys already know there's serious consequences when you directly disobey the law. So, back in Joshua 22, it says in verse 11, and when the Israelites heard that they had built the altar on the border of Canaan, la la la, they decided to go to war with them. How did they hear about this? I kind of get the idea that, and I don't mean to like come down on the Gadites and the Reubenites and those guys, but I kind of get the idea that they didn't really talk this over with their brothers, right? Yeah, they didn't really like send anybody back to any of the other tribes, Judah or Benjamin or whoever, and say, hey, we got an idea, we're going to build an altar. What do you guys think? Instead, they just like built this up really quickly. This huge imposing altar. So how'd they hear about it? How'd the Western tribes hear about it? Their enemies. That's the only real answer to this. It's the enemies of Israel who they come up to the Israelites and they say, hey, I just thought you might want to know that your brothers, and when going across the river, they built this altar. I think maybe they hate you or something. So you should know about this, right? Yeah. I tell you what, man. The enemies of the people of God will do anything to see us fight with one another. They really will. And so as soon as they see this as an opportunity to maybe get a little bit of war going here between the Israelites, they take that opportunity. They pass on this news. And so then we decide to go to war here. Point number two is simply this. United believers are in a war against sin. United believers commend those who serve well. Number two, united believers are in a war against sin. You and I are in a war against sin. Against sin in our own selves, in our own lives, and against sin in the body of Christ. We're in a war against it. These guys are in a war as well against sin. And as soon as they get the idea, even if it came from the enemies, as soon as they get that idea that these guys built an altar, and if they start sacrificing on that altar, they are in direct disobedience to the law, and that has consequences not just for them, but for us. We're all the people of God. When we have obeyed in the past, disobeyed in the past, I mean, sometimes God just like opens up the earth and swallows some people. You know? And so if they're going to be in disobedience, we got to do something about this right away. What's even worse, I don't know if it crosses their mind, but it comes up a little bit later here. They might have even said, what if they're building this altar to sacrifice to a different god? I mean, that's even worse. No matter what god they're sacrificing to, it's wrong. So we got to do something right away. Let's go kill them. I get the idea that, you know, these guys had been labeled as cowards like years and years before because they wouldn't come into the land. Now we send them home and now they do this? So yeah, united believers are in a war against sin. So what do? They pick out Phinehas. Phinehas. They pick out Phinehas to lead the delegation to go talk to him. Phinehas, I should let you know, he's kind of like Jack Bauer from 24, if you've ever watched that show. He's the guy you call when there is an imminent threat to national security and we need to get things done right now. Phinehas is the guy who one time the Israelites had been led astray by some Moabite women, and Phinehas is the guy who says, I can fix this. So he picks up his sword and like runs it right through the man and the woman together. They're like belly to belly. Yeah. That's a pretty picture. So anyhow, when they get this idea that there's this altar, they're like, we got to get something done. Call Phineas. Call him. We got to get him in here. Phineas is the son of Eleazar. He's the grandson of Aaron. Aaron, Moses' brother. He's zealous for God's honor. We know that. He's been assigned to leadership by Moses. He's a big deal. So he heads this delegation to head out to talk to these other tribes. Let's go on to the next part of the story here. We're at verse 15. So when they went to Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they said to them, the whole assembly of the Lord says, how could you break faith with the God of Israel like this? How could you turn away from the Lord and build yourselves an altar in rebellion against him now? Was not the sin of Peor enough for us? Up to this very day we have not cleansed ourselves from that sin, even though a plague fell on the community of the Lord. And are you now turning away from the Lord? If you rebel against the Lord today, tomorrow he will be angry with the whole community of Israel. If the land you possess is defiled, then come over to the Lord's land, where the Lord's tabernacle stands, and share the land with us. But do not rebel against the Lord or against us by building an altar for yourselves other than the altar of the Lord our God. When Achan, son of Zerah, acted unfaithfully regarding the devoted things, did not wrath come upon the whole community of Israel? And he was not the only one who died for his sin. I get the idea that this is Phineas' speech to them. Next point. United believers seek restoration through dialogue. So anyhow, if they decided, let's go kill him, then why didn't they just storm into the land and just kill them? Well, Phineas, even though he's a man of action, he's also a man of words here. And he knows that really the goal is not to kill these guys. The goal is to restore the fellowship between the tribes on each side of the Jordan. That would be the best thing, right? If we can just overcome our differences here, specifically around this altar. So that's the goal. United believers seek restoration through dialogue. If you and I are going to live together as united believers the way that Jesus wants us to, then we need to seek restoration through dialogue. When people make mistakes, when people build imposing altars, we need to seek restoration, not just run into the land with our swords out. He gives some examples here in the past. This whole the sin of Peor, that was the instance where he shoved the spear through the two people. You guys probably remember Achan. He was the guy who had stolen some things, and then not only he died, but his whole family. You can look that up. Phineas gets into a dialogue with him, and he says, look, we don't want to have to kill you, but we will, but we really don't want to. Because that's not the goal. The goal here is, check this out. What he actually says is there something wrong with your land? Is there a problem that you have with your land? And he's probably thinking, the land that you picked out, is there a problem with it? Because if there's a problem with your land, you could come have some of ours. The Lord's land, over on the right side of the Jordan, you could have some of that. If that's what the problem is. That is a very, very generous offer. It really is, if you think about it. That shows that he wants restoration above anything else. Come over and share my place. Don't build an altar out here. What in the world is wrong with you guys? That's basically his speech. United believers seek restoration through dialogue. Let's see what happens. Verse 21. Then Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. I love saying that over and over. And over. You know what I mean? Reuben, Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh. They replied to the heads of the clans of Israel. The mighty one, God, the Lord. The mighty one, God, the Lord. He knows. And let Israel know, if this has been in rebellion or disobedience to the Lord, do not spare us this day. Bold. Don't spare us. If we have built our own altar to turn away from the Lord and to offer burnt offerings and grain offerings or to sacrifice fellowship offerings on it, may the Lord himself call us to account. No, we did it for fear that someday your descendants might say to ours, what do you have to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has made the Jordan a boundary between us and you, you Reubenites and Gadites. You have no share in the Lord, so your descendants might cause ours to stop fearing the Lord. And that is why we said, let us get ready and build an altar, but not for burnt offerings or sacrifices. On the contrary, it is to be a witness between us and you and the generations that follow that we will worship the Lord at his sanctuary and with our burnt offerings, sacrifices, and fellowship offerings. And then in the future, your descendants will not be able to say to ours, you have no share in the Lord. And we said, if they ever say this to us or to our descendants, we will answer, look at the replica of the Lord's altar, which our fathers built. Not for burnt offerings and sacrifices, but as a witness between us and you. Far be it from us to rebel against the Lord and to turn away from him today by building an altar for burnt offerings, grain offerings, and sacrifices, other than the altar of the Lord our God that stands before his tabernacle. So, hey, that's good news. The plan was never to offer sacrifices on this. It supposedly stands as a witness between them. So, here's a good ministry principle. Actually, here's a bad ministry principle. Let's say you're really, really afraid. Let's say you're really consumed by fear of something. Then go and build an altar. Or for that matter, make any kind of a good ministry decision based out of fear. That's the first thing they say. Why'd you build this? We were afraid. We were afraid. So we built an altar. We built it that way you guys would remember that we're part of you guys. We're brothers. Evidently, the idea that they baked up while they were walking back, the idea is as you come up to the Jordan and you see it's a big, I mean, it's a boundary. It's a huge boundary between these guys. You come up to it and you see across the river over on the Israelite side, you see the, maybe that's why they built it so big. Imposing. And you see all the way up, you see this nice altar, and it reminds you, you go that way and you'll find the Lord's altar at Shiloh. Evidently, that's kind of what they had in mind. Now, the Israelites, they didn't see it that way until we get it explained here a little bit. So that was their idea. They say, no, it's not for sacrifices, not for burnt offerings, not for any of those kinds of offerings. Next point here. United believers accept responsibility for their actions. United believers accept responsibility for their actions. If you and I are going to live together as Jesus wants to, as united believers, we need to accept responsibility for our actions. These guys over on the other side of the Jordan, you don't see any blame shifting here. They're not like, why are you guys coming at us with swords? There's not any of that. Instead, they say, you guys are exactly right. If we built this altar to offer sacrifices on us, then please kill us right now because we are in rebellion against God. They say that. They say, you're exactly right. If that's what you think we're doing, then we should die. But let me just say, that's not what we're doing. Before you kill us, let me explain. It's supposed to be so that we'll remember that we're brothers. It's such an ironic thing, isn't it, if you think about it? The Easterners were afraid that they would be thought of as rivals to the Westerners. So they built an altar to remind the Westerners that we're not your rivals, but the Westerners said, this makes you look like rivals to us. They probably could have made a better choice than that. The Reubenites, the Gadites, half-tribe of Manasseh. You know, we're always so intent to work things out by ourselves. Rather than just asking the hard questions, having the conversations we need to, why didn't they just go and talk to them? Why didn't they send some guys back and said, you know, we were walking home and we got to thinking, I'm kind of afraid that one of these days you guys might say, the folks on the other side of the river, they're not really part of the Lord's assembly anymore. So is there anything we could do about that? That might have been better than just building a huge altar on somebody else's land. So it's weird. They were afraid that there'd be a division, and their fear of that, and action based on their fear, created division. Actually almost created a civil war and almost got them all killed. It's kind of ironic. But the good news is that united believers accept responsibility for their actions. And they said, you guys are right, it looks like that, but let us explain. So let's hear the end of the story here. Verses 30 to 34, then we need to wrap up. So when Phinehas, the priest, and the leaders of the community, the heads of the clans and the Israelites, heard what Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh had to say, they were pleased. And Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, said to Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, today we know that the Lord is with us, because you have not acted unfaithfully towards the Lord in this matter. Now you have rescued the Israelites from the Lord's hand. And then Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, and the leaders returned to Canaan from their meeting with the Reubenites, the Gadites, in Gilead, and reported to the Israelites. And they were glad to hear the report, and they praised God. And they talked no more about going to war against them to devastate the country where the Reubenites and the Gadites lived. And the Reubenites and the Gadites gave the altar this name, a witness between us that the Lord is God. United believers rejoice with the truth. We don't delight in evil. We rejoice with the truth. You know, it's a huge testimony to me that these guys even believed them. If you think about it, they build this huge altar and they say, wait. No, we weren't going to sacrifice anything on it. Think about it. These guys were prepared for war. They'd been sharpening their swords. Some of the guys probably bought new armor. They were all excited to go to war. They were probably posting things on social media, crazy memes about, we're going to get them all, or whatever. And so they were like invested in this. They were ready to do it. And then these guys say, no, we weren't going to use the altar. It was just so that we would know that we're brothers. So we know that we're brothers. That's what the altar is. It's a witness between us that we serve the same God that you serve, and we're all part of God's family. And so they say, yeah, all right. Well, that pleases us because we rejoice with the truth. We believe that you're telling the truth, and this is good news, and we're going to go home and tell the rest of the clans. We rejoice with the truth. You know, there are some times in my own life that have you ever heard about you prepare for the worst, but you hope for the best? There are some times in my life that I have secretly prepared for the worst and then kind of hoped for it. I can imagine these guys with their swords be like, I'm ready to kill these guys, these cowards. I'm ready. And so when they tell them that that's not even what we're using the altar for, it's a wonderful testimony that they believe them. And that they go home and they tell it. United believers rejoice with the truth. They rejoice with the truth. If you and I are going to live together as Jesus wants us to, then we need to rejoice with the truth. To rejoice with the truth. Not to think the worst of one another. Did my mic stop? No, never mind. Not to think the worst, but instead to rejoice with the truth. The proud sometimes will doggedly stand by their false accusations simply because of what they've invested in it. I feel like I've done that before. You make an accusation, it turns out not to be true, but I wanted it to be that way. Yeah. No. So in the end of the story here, the stronger brothers bear with the weaker brothers, because it could have been that the end of the story is these guys on the west side of the river, they said, "Man, am I glad that you guys are not going to sacrifice on the altar. Tear it down." That's how I would have ended the story. Tear it down. This is a huge mistake. But instead, they let them keep the altar. They name it. This is a reminder to us that we are brothers. This is a reminder to us that a bunch of us could have died today. But instead, we live on as the people of God. It's a witness that they are united. Because the Lord our God, the Lord is one. They built the altar for the same reason that we get united on the wheel up there. It's a reminder to us that that's what God calls us to, along with the rest of the things on our wheel. A reminder. So what do we learn? United believers commend those who serve well. United believers are in a war against sin. United believers seek restoration through dialogue. United believers accept responsibility for their actions. And united believers rejoice with the truth. Let's stand and sing.